All right, what's happening, people of the Organic Outbound Secrets group? Today is Wednesday, April 27th. We're going to talk shop here with Jeremy with the crazy last name here, Herskovich. Maybe that's nice. It, maybe not. Are we close enough? Yeah. All right, there we go. So we're going to talk shop about a little bit of tax planning strategy. He happens to live in one of the nicest states for weather and one of the worst possible states for paying tax. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to make things right in your business. If you're listening in Organic Outbound Secrets and you are somebody who is a disregarded entity, or you're somebody who's a sole prop and you're like, hey, I could probably be planning a little bit better, you can reach out to Jeremy. That's Jeremy at calcpagroup.com. So that's calcpagroup.com. We'll drop that in the description. We'll tag him in the Facebook group here if that's where you're watching it. And this will also go out to YouTube and all of our other channels as well. So welcome to the Business Highlight Series. Let's start off with who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I appreciate the intro. I appreciate you getting my last name mostly right, closer than most people get. And I mean, like you said, you know, CPA out here in gorgeous California, definitely pay the beach tax, as I call it, right? You know, and I'm currently a CPA, formerly a financial planner. So that kind of gives both sides of the coin. We work with a lot of businesses, a lot of sole proprietors, and a lot of people that are sort of small to mid-range. So we've worked with companies from, you know, one or two owners all the way up into Fortune 50 companies. I like this niche. I think it's where we can add the most value, and it's where the tax system is the least understood. And we've taken a bunch of clients to sale, to transactions, ultimately to IPOs. So I'm pretty familiar with this part of the business cycle.
Yeah, in from your experience, you know, most people, when they have a dream to start a business because they want to help people, or they love the thing that they're working on and they create that business, what are some of the things that you see as, you know, core problems when people start? Because I know people run a million miles a minute at the beginning, they're trying to get everything set up. And then it's one of these things that you get to, you know, April of the next year and you're like, yeah, this was probably not the best strategy, right? So like, what kind of things do you see that are problematic?
Well, I think there's a technical answer and then there's kind of a more of a plug answer. So maybe I'll give both. The technical answer is that people are awful at bookkeeping. People are awful at understanding the administrative piece of running a business, right? Local city business licenses, you know, state tax payments, federal tax payments, staying on top of your estimates, some of the more intricate pieces of like capitalizing versus expenses. You know, amortizing your research and development, which is a huge piece of starting a business. If I take a step back though, I think the better answer is a lot of people are really happy to invest in legal counsel when they start an entity, right? You're like, okay, I gotta pay to have somebody draw up the legal documents. I think a lot of people are all too happy to save on the accounting piece, right? And they just go, well, I'm good at math, or, you know, it's a small operation, so I'm not going to pay for the accountants, right? I'm going to keep that money to grow my business. Yeah. I think the one thing I would tell people is investing in a good accountant is like investing in a good first employee, right? You don't want to take the time or stress about having to understand the intricate parts of your tax and financial picture. Just offload that shit. You know, if it's $2,000 or $2,500, I guarantee you in the first 10 minutes of looking over a set of financials, I can find $5,000 or $10,000 in tax savings or tax credits. It's worth it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the part that most people overlook is everyone's so focused. I shouldn't say everyone. A lot of small business owners are so focused on like, hey, can I write this thing off, right? And there's like, no interest in credits, like there's no focus on credits, right? R&D or any of the other kind of like small business potentially focused credits. So they're just focused on like, how can I expense this? And at the end of the day, it's like that money is that you're spending that is not money that's realized back to you, like in the form of depreciation or, you know, on paper.
So on point. And when I get new clients that are entrepreneurs, a lot of it is, can you help me save more in taxes? Can you help me deduct more things?
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that's a really, really aggressive position to just keep finding things to deduct, right? Yeah. So people are like, you know, my old CPA wouldn't let me write off my suit, or my old CPA wouldn't let me write off my Apple Watch. And even better is when people will come to me and go, hey, I read this article, or hey, my friend's doing this thing. Why are we not doing this, right? And then I'm in the position of having to prove the negative, right? Like standing up for myself.
Yeah.
And so I think to sort of get back to your question, you know, yeah, finding deductions for the things that you would spend on is great, right? A research project and a marketing campaign, you know, yeah, it'd be great to get a tax benefit for spending on those things. If you're good enough at the tax code, you understand where you can find the real hidden gems, where the tax code is really good to entrepreneurs. And it's in things like you're talking about, research and development activities, DPAT activities, you know, foreign derived investment income, foreign derived intangible income, right? If you're good enough at leveraging these different pieces of starting a business, you don't need to get aggressive with trying to find deductions for Starbucks and Burger King.
Well, and that's the funny one too, is like food, right? A lot of these guys, you know, they're eating out, and it's like, hey, I was doing business while I was eating, so it's automatically a deduction. It's like, well, maybe not. Like, it kind of depends, right? And I think those are the day-to-day kind of deductions people are looking at. But there's other things like, hey, can I, you know, shift a vehicle into the business? Can I purchase a heavy vehicle and bonus depreciate it? Can I buy a piece of real estate towards end of the year and cost seg it so that I can get rid of some of my passive activity? Like, there's some of these other, maybe more, I guess, not advanced strategies, but they're just things that require a little bit more effort. What are you seeing most people ask for today? Like, where's the interest in tax planning?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people don't know what they don't know, right? So at the very beginning of this podcast, of this interview, you mentioned, for example, we have a lot of sole proprietors, a lot of single member LLCs.
Yeah.
That scares me, yeah. Right? Yeah. I took on a client recently. She was a marketer, and she was earning $250,000 net as a sole proprietor. If you know anything about the tax code, that makes your skin crawl, right? Because you're paying self-employment tax and income tax on $250,000. So the first thing we did was we said, you have a full operation that's just sort of sitting on a Schedule C. So we took her company and we said, well, how can we bifurcate what you're doing? Let's send the software piece of it to a C Corp where we can, you know, harness some of your research and development activities. And let's send the social media, the advertising piece of it to an S Corp where we can figure out how to strategically set your wage amount so that you're only paying payroll taxes, self-employment tax on those wages instead of $250,000.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of coaching, you know, even to this day, she's like, look, I still don't understand this small piece of it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that's why you spend the money, right? Because I do know how to take your current setup and optimize it from a tax standpoint. So I think a lot of people are asking for deductions, right? And that's boring. I think what a lot of people should be asking is my entity set up correctly? Am I leveraging some of the people around me to the best of, you know, my abilities? And ultimately, you know, what am I not thinking of? What am I not, you know, leveraging? And that gives me a much longer runway to be able to say, well, let me ask these questions and we can sort of swirl around what best is going to help you.
Yeah, and I think the whole old adage of C Corp versus S Corp, it's still very much so alive today, and it's kind of contingent on what kind of business activity you're doing, right? Like, I think there's, when I talk to a lot of different CPAs about their strategies, and it's usually without any context, I just ask them C or S. And if they give me an answer without asking more questions, I know there's a problem, right? Because like, it kind of matters what kind of behavior you're trying to do,
yeah.
And what makes sense for, you know, your specific circumstance. What are you seeing most people strategize around right now when they're doing an entity election between an S and a C? Are you seeing any trends towards, you know, C's just because of 21%, you know, max tax rate there? Are you seeing people still use S and try and get rid of as much depreciation on the Schedule E? What are you seeing people focus on right now in general?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that, or I should say the vast majority of people kind of stick to what they know, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, like the new trend is S-corps, right? I'm seeing a lot of people that at some point an old tax advisor or some friend, or they Googled it and they found out that S-corporations are most beneficial. Blanket statement, which we love, right? And so every time they set up an entity, they set up another S-corp, right? And so then you get to a point where you go, and I just had this, okay, you have 10 S-corps that are all earning profit. That's really cool. There's a statutory requirement for S-corporations to pay a reasonable salary to owner officers. So can I see the 10 W-2s you know, that you received from these 10 S corps? And of course they're like, well, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, yeah, they only have one.
Yeah, if they even ever have one, right? And so in that case, so for example, to carry this to conclusion, what I would say is, for somebody like that that has sort of a lot of different business lines, I would love to see like a mothership model, a C corporation that owns a share of a bunch of different single member LLCs, way different than 10 S corps, right? So I see a lot of people that really stick to their guns, you know, that that are really just sort of focused on what they've been doing. I would say, you know, it really depends on your net income, right? And I'll usually take a client through these different scales. And of course, you know, you should put this disclaimer everywhere that it's not tax advice, right? But typically what I'll see is, if you're starting a business, you know, a pass through like an LLC is probably a safe bet, right? You know, you're if the expectation is that you're going to have a loss and you have other income, you can net that loss against, you know, your other income, you know, so that's cool. You start making profit and you get up to around, you know, 80, 100, 120 net. At that point, I think you're an S corp land, right? You can save on some self-employment tax by, you know, making that S election, paying wages. If you're an S corporation and your net is 450, 500, 750 and up, you are paying more than you need to in taxes, full stop, right? At that point, usually it makes sense to switch over to a C corp. Now, why? Well, that would probably take another 2 hours and an engagement letter, right? You know, we're good at this stuff. We've done it before and we know how to save thousands in taxes. But for a blanket statement, that's kind of the scale that I would use. So I would invite your listeners to sort of to take a second, look at their profit and losses and say, you know, where am I? According to that scale that I just got, am I good as a single member LLC where I can just kind of keep going with this, you know, with the expense harvesting? Or do I need to rethink, you know, how I'm doing business as an entity?
Yeah, I think those are really good strategies too, you know, to kind of bucket them, right? Because then as people progress in their business and they make more money and they have more business lines and more entities, their situation changes over time, right? I think a lot of people think like, hey, well, I've been doing this for 5 years, so the strategy doesn't change. And it really does. Like, hey, you bought a short-term rental, you bought a long-term rental, you have a ton of capital expenditure, you have depreciation, like things change each year. And I think the strategy needs to change to accommodate that particular situation. And as you pointed out, really what that net operating income or what that net at the end of it's going to be, that's what you should be making the decision on. But it's very interesting to see the lack of knowledge in this space, right? Like there's lots of people who are CPAs. There's a lot of people who are really good at money, making money. Not too many people good at saving money, right? And not saving money in the conventional sense of like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, make $100,000 and save $80,000 in my bank account. Not that kind of saving, but like saving on, like you said, proper planning strategy, you know, in their business entity. So, you know, when you see people making this transition, making more money, you know, are you seeing anybody that's starting to do a different strategy? Are you seeing anybody that's looking into a direction saying, hey, I want to go this direction for this kind of reason? Like, are you seeing any trends like that right now in the marketplace?
No, I'm not. And it's so funny because when I was younger, you know, I always knew about myself philosophically that I was never going to be a Dr. Connor Robertson, right? I knew that I didn't have it in me to go and, you know, create a group of thousands of people and, you know, and develop a product and, you know, and you know, teach strategies on making yourself appealing in sales. It's not me, you know, I don't have the face for it. Yeah. So I always knew that I would sort of be on this side of the table, right? Sort of counsel to these people and I would get paid for what I'm good at. And I always thought, you know, when I finally get to the clientele that's making over $1 million, that was a real specific niche, right? Like those people had their shit together. They were incredibly impressive in all aspects. They spoke a different language. And what you find is that, you know, like you said, there's people, and I'm laughing because I'm taking a lot of them on as clients right now, that are making $10, $15, $30 million a year and still, you know, don't even know what their bank login is. You know, don't have a set of financials, don't have a P&L, have no clue. They're living the good life. You know, they're spending on their Ferraris and all that, but they don't speak the money language.
Yeah.
And so to your point, the way those are some of my favorite engagements, right? Because I get to say, look, stay in your lane, keep making a lot of money because that's good for both of us. I'm going to be here in my lane and I'm going to collect all of your financial information. I'm going to build you a set of books. I'm going to do your bookkeeping. I'm going to let you know how the financial reporting is going to go. I'm going to do your tax strategy, your asset management, and then ultimately we'll prepare the tax return, right? That's the last 2% of all that. To your point about strategy, here's the reality of it, right? I was late to crypto like everybody else was. I believe in it. I think it's a cool investment. At this point, the best tax advantageous supplemental investing you can do, in my opinion, not tax advice, is still in real estate because of the nugget that you mentioned already, depreciation, right? Whatever you do, whatever you go and read, it's still all about depreciation at this point, right? And so when you first start a business, you invest in the business, right? If you get $10,000, you don't go, well, Jeremy said to put it in real estate, so I'm gonna go do that, right? You invest it in your business because the rate of return for your business is still, you know, fantastic, right? I'm spending money so I can keep making more money. Well, eventually when you're making millions of dollars, spending $10,000 on a course, it doesn't do the same thing for you. And from a tax standpoint, it doesn't either.
Yeah.
So you're forced to say, okay, I have this big money machine, right?
Yeah.
And I'm good at that and I can keep building this thing. But holy shit, if I'm going to keep spending, you know, 30% of my income, 40% of my income in taxes, I need to spend it on something else so that I can keep more of it.
Yeah.
The government knows you want to do that. I know you want to do that. You know you want to do that. So you have the availability of purchasing real estate. And so I would say once you get to the point where you know you're making too much to just, you know, reduce to zero with expenses, that's the perfect time to go and invest in real estate as a supplement to what you have going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great, great insight too, because most people, they're thinking to themselves, like you said, how do we get more deductions? Like, dude, there's only so many $10,000 courses you can buy. There's only so many pieces of clothing with your logo on it that you can buy. Like, there's only so many, you're not buying 15 cars a year to bonus free. Like, there's a limit to that stuff. But
absolutely,
on the real estate side, there is theoretically no limit. If you have the cash and you have proper way to close and you have a lender that makes sense for you, you can depreciate your way as far as you want. You can depreciate yourself negatively and just carry it forward if you want to, right? There's right, so much availability that exists there. And I think most people know they want to do real estate, but they don't know how to structure it creatively, right?
That's so right.
That's where it's at today. And I think Airbnb, I think that's a, you know, we talked before about this, like we're starting to do more and more and more of Airbnb, and that's a phenomenal model. You get all the benefits of real estate. You're still purchasing property. You're still getting depreciation, but the cash flow is just unbelievable on most short-term rentals, VRBO or Airbnb. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see that being a good trend for people to get into on the Airbnb side if they don't want to be in the long-term space?
Well, my financial planning sort of part of the brain starts clicking when we start talking like this, you know, and it's an answer that financial planners, accountants, and attorneys love and everybody else hates, right? It depends.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, here's what I like. If you come to me and you go, look, Jeremy, I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. It's sitting in the account. I have no idea what to do with it. Right. My thinking is, well, if you look at all of the money that you have as a portfolio, right, you have a piece of it that's decently aggressive, right? You got to work to make the money. And if you work harder, you make more. But if you work less, you make less, right? You need to supplement that. We used that word before. You need to supplement that with something that's a lot more conservative, right? Something that if you get sick for a week, if you want to take a vacation, if you want to do whatever, you still have money coming in, right?
Yep.
So separate from the tax piece of this, and it is tax advantageous, separate from the tax piece, you need a part of your portfolio that's consistently firing off income, right? And with a rental, for example, whether that's a short-term rental like an Airbnb like you described, or a multifamily, more traditional industrial rental, whatever it is, you need to know that I'm going to get my rental check this month, even though I'm taking time off to spend with my family.
Yeah.
Right? So the Airbnb space is cool because it's a little bit more it's a little bit more of a modern model, right? Yep. You're talking to people that, you know, that look a little bit more like us, right? That are kind of younger, getting into investing, and you know, they might go to Coachella, so they understand why the model works. They pay a shit ton for their rental, so they want one, right? You know, or you might say, look, man, you know, the tried and true, you know, fourplex down the street from us, that's been working for my parents and grandparents. I want one of those, and I want to set it and forget it, you know, and there's room for that too. So it really just does depend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that that's the big part about tax planning and financial advice and financial thought in general is what's best for you as the individual. Are you trying to make active or passive activity? How can you do a bit of both? How can you make truly passive, not Schedule E passive activity, but like passive where it's generating on its own, whether that's portfolio income or rental income or even crypto income, right? Those are all great ways.
And to interrupt you, so imagine how frustrating it is, right? When I spend all day every day talking to specific clients about this universe of tools and what's going to work specifically for them. Imagine how frustrating it is when a client or a prospect says, well, my friend does this, so that's what I want to do. And you have to take the position that, okay, well, your friend is $50 million a year agency. You just crossed $150,000, right? Yeah. You'll get to those strategies. They make sense. He's not wrong. But give me some time, right? Let's work up to that first.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the circumstantial piece of around tax planning as a whole is the right place, right time, right people, right activity, right? That's the big kind of loop. So I want to keep it fairly short here. We got 2 minutes left. For those of you who are watching this in Organic Outbound Secrets, right? We've had these kind of conversations multiple times at this point in the group about you got to make sure your stuff is cleaned up, right? Everyone just paid tax April 15th, right? So like 15 days ago or whatever that is, 13 days ago. Start planning now for this year, right? We're already a quarter and change into the year. Don't wait until like November and December and scramble to try to like buy a piece of real estate to offset your income at the end of the year. Plan now, get someone in your corner that understands what you're trying to do. Read up a little bit on C-Corps and S-Corps to understand and just standard pass-through LLCs, right? And understand what your strategy is, and then talk to somebody like Jeremy who can advise you on how to go to that next level, right? It's one thing to understand the basics, but if you want to actually have good advice, then you're going to want to talk with someone like Jeremy. So if you are watching this and you're interested, you can email Jeremy@calcpagroup.com. We'll drop that in the description. We'll tag him in the Facebook group. Really appreciate you coming on, man. Very interesting insight, your kind of strategy and mentality, especially living in the highest tax state on planet Earth. So thanks for coming on, man. Have a great day. And for anybody who's listening, please reach out, Jeremy@calcpagroup.com. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.